This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Sports royalty is on the air. This is the only show with so much talent and expert analysis, it can barely be contained. Jump on now or it'll pass you by. This is Place to Be Nation's Sports Evolution.
Place to Be Nation. We are in the thick of war on the gridiron. Welcome to the newest edition of your home for everything sports, Place to Be Nation's Sports Evolution. Your co-host, Scott Priscilla. We have a packed show tonight, so we got a lot to talk about. We got the NFL playoffs. Playoffs? We've got college hoops. We have got some boxing this weekend. My man's fighting Saturday night, the WBC heavyweight champion. And even a little MMA tidbit I want to throw at one of my guys, one of the guys tonight. But we can't do anything until I bring them in. The family is here. First off, the cowboy, Roger Morsett.
What's happening, Scott?
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fantastic. Yourself?
I'm great. And the tidbit that I want to bring up involves our man, Mr. Conor McGregor. Little news out today. We'll talk about that later. And, of course, you know my man Deontay Wilder's fighting on Saturday. So we'll talk about that, too.
He is. It's another tomato can. So he
Polish. And he's fighting. It's a good heavyweight bout on the undercard, too. We'll get to that later. Cowboy, always a pleasure. And, of course, because his team had the week off, it's time to talk about them for Saturday. Cowboy Senior.
How you doing, Scott?
I'm good, sir. It was a fascinating weekend in the National Football League. And, of course, we are in between the wild card round, which happened this past weekend, and the divisional playoffs, which will be on Saturday and Sunday. Let's talk a little bit about the weekend, guys. The weekend opened up in Kansas City, where the Chiefs laid a beating down on the Texans, 30-0. They defeat Houston. Senior, quick thoughts on that game.
Well, you know, it was a beating, but really, if it wasn't for Brian Hoyer, it might have been a pretty good game. I mean, he was just so bad that it just destroyed the whole game. Because, I mean, to say all the opportunities Kansas City had in the first half with all the turnovers and everything, I mean, they returned the opening kickoff for a touchdown, which was the most ridiculous-looking return you'll ever see in your life.
I know.
Niall Davis just kind of started off to the left and then just ran straight ahead. I mean, anybody could have returned it for the touchdown. Talk about not covering a kickoff. And then they got all those other opportunities, and yet it was 13-0 at halftime. So Kansas City really wasn't taking advantage of the opportunities with Hoyer turning the ball over four times in the first half.
I know.
Three really bad interceptions and a fumble that was really an unforced error on him. So, you know, with all that said, the Texans defense was really playing well. Really hanging right with the Chiefs defense. It's just Hoyer just gave it away so much that they finally just couldn't sustain it. So, it's kind of a funky game where I don't think that the guy is that bad of a quarterback, but man, did he ever lay an egg. It's about as bad a game as I've ever seen anyone play in the playoffs. So that
Jake
was
DeLome.
Really the story of
game since Jake DeLome.
I mean, that's really the story of the game.
Right.
I mean, it's hard to measure how well Kansas City played because Hoyer just really handed them the game on a silver platter. And obviously they had nothing else to go to because poor Bill O'Brien had Brandon Whedon next to him, so there was no other option. He hung with Hoyer, and we all know what the result was. It was awful.
So clearly the Texans need a quarterback. That's one of their biggest stuff. That's a big thing for the offseason.
Pieces on that team. I mean, as good a wide receiver as there is in football, when he's healthy, Arian Foster's a really good running back. You know, an excellent defense, obviously, with some big names on it, and no quarterback. And if we look at the eight teams that are left, you know, it's quarterback-driven league. Look at the eight quarterbacks that are still playing.
Yep.
And, you know, so you just don't move on with a performance like Hoyer had, obviously.
Yeah. Any thoughts on the game, Cowboy?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of echo a lot of what Senior said. I mean, if you watch the game, I mean, Hoyer essentially lost the game single-handedly. Kansas City has been playing really well. 11 wins in a row. They're hot. They're a pretty complete team. But they didn't do anything in that game that really made me say, wow, stand up and say, wait a minute. Travis Kelce had a good game. I feel like, they don't involve him enough just with the conservative nature of the offense. And their defense played well. But again, when the quarterback plays that poorly, it's impossible to win the game. So kind of a expected result for a lot of people. I actually liked Houston in the game, but I didn't know that DeLome was going to show up.
So we'll talk about where the Chiefs are heading this weekend in a moment. Let's talk about next up that utter. Actually, it was a pretty good football game until the last 2 minutes of the fourth quarter, and then it turned into an utter dumpster fire. And maybe on our next this week when we have our next episode over the weekend, maybe we can get Rob Carpenter on to ask this, because I want to ask somebody who's been in an NFL locker room, what in God's name happens when you are a team like the Cincinnati Bengals? I mean, they were, forget the fumble by Hill. Let's get that out of the equation, because fumbles happen, unfortunately. Ernest Biner. But they still had a chance to win that game. And to utterly just implode like that. Perfect with the headhunting shot on Brown. And of course now, Pac-Man says that Brown was faking it. Yeah, of course. Stay classy. And then of course what he did, because he didn't think he was gonna get, he was not gonna get penalized for shoving a ref. Everything fell apart. What ended up being what would have been a very difficult field goal for the Steelers ended up being one that I could have kicked, and the Steelers win 18-16, and they move on to Denver. Cowboy, if you're Marvin Lewis, are you lucky to even have your job right now?
Yeah, I mean, guy, clearly I'm pretty surprised he still has his job. I thought they were going to axe him last year, and I mean, just it was a very, very undisciplined, obviously. I mean, emotions were high in that game, and you were seeing it on both ends. What Burfict did to Brown is, I think, the stupidest play I probably, it was like a Leon Lett-esque play, but with, like, really bad intentions. You
right.
know, just completely unnecessary. I mean, there was under 20 seconds left in the game, and to just give them field goal position, hitting a guy in the head for no reason. But Burfict acted like a loose cannon the whole game. That was, I mean, the hit to put Roethlisberger out, he definitely threw a little extra into. And it gave the appearance of inmates running the asylum. Lewis had no control over his team. And, I mean, I don't want to talk like I've heard a lot of other people say this, but it's true. I mean, can you imagine a Bill Belichick coach team acting like that? Or
absolutely not.
Even Scott, a Tom Coughlin coach team acting like that. I can't.
Right.
It's a, Lewis shouldn't have a job. That team's got, personnel wise, that team is as talented as anybody in football, and they just can't. He can't get them over the hump. And you brought up Jeremy Hill. I mean, that's a god-awful fumble, and none of the other stuff happens if he just holds on to the ball. But
true.
Lewis made him apologize to the whole team after the game. He made Jeremy Hill get up in front of the whole team and apologize. Not Vontaze Burfict, not Pac-Man, Jeremy Hill. So I think that kind of speaks to, Lewis is worried about, I guess just the football aspect and doesn't give a shit about the, personal fouls.
The life aspect,
And, I mean, frankly, I mean, I think it was a, I don't know if it was a break for the Patriots or not. Cincinnati played pretty well in that game, and it was a real ballsy drive by McCarron at the end. Great touchdown pass to Green. Certainly on paper, Cincinnati's a better team than Kansas City. I think it was a big gift for Denver, because Pittsburgh with maybe without Antonio Brown and with a one-armed Ben Roethlisberger I don't think has much of a chance going into Mile High. But yeah, crazy game. I mean, a lot of you know, just crazy to watch as a fan. I was trying to senior. Maybe you can think of it. I don't ever remember an instance, not at the end of a playoff game, but just in any game with 2 15-yard penalties on the same play. Do you ever remember
no.
a third 30
no.
yard?
Not that I could think of either. No.
No. And you know, when you think of the way Perfect plays, he's a really good player. There's no doubt about it. And that crazy aggressiveness can be a really good thing in a defensive player. You know, I think of guys like Ronnie Lott, Rodney Harrison. Okay, I'm naming safeties. Okay, Ray Lewis. Let's go with a linebacker like him, who definitely used being a little crazy and intimidation, but in a calculated way. They took their personal fouls because they wanted guys to be, you know, the safeties guys to be thinking when they came across the middle, and receivers to have alligator arms, and just guys to be worried that they're there. Ray Lewis, the same kind of guy. Butkus, you could go on and on. But those guys did, they were semi-nuts, but it was calculated in a lot of ways, where this guy is just a lunatic, because none of those guys I just said would have done what he did at the time he did it.
Absolutely not. I agree.
They used it as intimidation, but they knew they were all about winning, and they knew when you there's a time where you just don't take that type of penalty. This guy's just nuts. I mean, if you go to the beginning of the game where you saw the officials standing at the 50-yard line blocking the teams from going on each side, we all know that's because the last time they played each other in the regular season, Perfect went over onto the Pittsburgh side and challenged the whole team to a fight, and there's a brawl before the game. And then you just look back on the last few weeks where Cowboy, you saying where he didn't apologize. Well, no wonder Lewis didn't tell him to apologize. Supposedly, from what I've heard, when he destroyed that TV camera like a maniac a few weeks ago, with the poor cameraman trying to hang on to the camera, Lewis told him to apologize, and he wouldn't apologize for it because he's nuts, because he's completely out of his mind. Then you had the last game of the regular season where in the Cleveland game, after a play, you got a guy just standing there, and he comes in and just destroys the guy. He's just an uncontrollable – he is a lunatic.
Yeah. And he really is. I don't even know why he's still in the league.
Makes him different. And I like, you know, and the Pac-Man thing was totally, totally, I just don't understand it, because in all honesty, Pac-Man had changed his image. You know, and he was seen more as a veteran team leader kind of guy on this team.
Yeah.
All the old bad Pac-Man stuff was in the past, and this was a different guy. And then he does that at the end of the game, and then he posts that ridiculous profanity-laced rant on Instagram, and I know Deion Sanders said after the game, he called him and told him to pull it down, that all the good that you've done for your image, everything you've done, you're blowing it up in 1 minute of rage. So, of course, Pac-Man took it down, but it was too late because it's copied everywhere. I mean, you can see it anywhere. So at some point, you got to put the coach responsible. It's not like this was the first time Perfect's acted like a maniac. He's been a maniac for a long time, and not once has Lewis ever done anything to him. He's never sat him down, nothing. So Marvin Lewis kind of deserved it. You know what I mean? I mean, the guy is totally out of control at some point in a regular season game somewhere. Okay, you didn't want to sit him in that game at the end because the game was on the line. Well, he ended up costing you the game, and you kind of deserved it, because – he should have been at least attempted to be taught that lesson a long time ago. And Lewis has never done anything to try to control him. So how that guy has a job is beyond me.
Yeah, I
totally agree.
I see. You know, the Pac-Man one, I think, is more forgivable than what Perfect did. You could make the argument that they could have called Joey Porter, Joey Porter was a complete asshole when he played, and I'm sure that is translated as a coach as well. And he could have called offsetting 15-yarders there. I mean,
totally agreed, but Pac-Man still should have known the situation,
right,
and had the discipline to keep himself under control. And it's almost like, okay, Porter got away with being on the field, and now he baited him. And a guy, this isn't a rookie or anything, this is a real veteran like Pac-Man, to took the bait and lost his mind, you know?
Right. And they had had the incident earlier in the game where the other coach pulled Reggie Nelson's hair on the sideline. So the Pittsburgh coaches were a little too involved in the game too. I mean,
he did get penalized for pulling his hair. You know?
All in all, I mean, it was a pretty ugly way for a playoff game to go. I mean, it did not show well for the league at all.
Is it it's a former offensive lineman, right? The coach, was it Munchak? Is that who it is?
Mike Munchak.
Yeah. That's another thing that happened in that game. I'm glad you remembered that, because I don't ever remember seeing an assistant coach take a personal foul in a game either.
I know.
He got a 15-yard personal foul.
I mean, everybody in that team just lost their minds. And
there was the hit by Shazier that, okay, we've got to blame the officials for that one. That's the one on, Jeremy Hill went crazy.
It was on Gio.
Hill went nuts and tried to defend him, but I mean, that was clearly helmet to helmet, nasty helmet to helmet stuff that they're supposed to be calling. And if you see the replay, there's an official literally right on top of the play, staring right at it, and he let it go.
So
now Cincinnati, and when something like that happens, you've got to be a disciplined team to be able to say, okay, everything's on the line in this game, and they missed that call, but we can't act like idiots. And that isn't going to happen with Cincinnati. That this just set them off worse and worse, especially Perfect. He's nuts. And what's the thing with running in the locker room with the ball after he intercepts it with a minute and a half? What the heck was that? I mean,
it's a premature celebration.
He's completely insane. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
He is insane.
There's a lot of mirror looking with the Cincinnati Bengal franchise this offseason, because it's got to be some soul searching, because it's just a big, gigantic mess. Now, here's a question, guys. Obviously, Andy Dalton will be healthy when this camp starts. Could very much some of these teams, like a Houston or whatever, kick AJ McCarron's tires, you think?
He did handle himself pretty well, in all honesty.
I don't think Cincinnati will get rid of him.
Yeah, I mean, that was a clutch drive at the end of the game. I was impressed with that. I mean, he didn't play great the whole game, but for a kid with that little experience to come through with that drive at the end of the game, that was pretty impressive.
He was a team implosion away from winning a playoff game. So
having something to do with it too.
Yeah,
really
exactly.
Through,
so
with a game-winning drive, that was pretty impressive.
I think he's a very, very serviceable backup, and there's not. I mean, I think his college pedigree kind of probably had him prepared more for the moment.
Yes.
Than 99% of other guys. I mean, that's probably not even the biggest game he's ever played in.
For those that...
True.
Go ahead, finish your point, Cowboy. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
So, I mean, I'm sure he could be had, but I mean, it would take probably like a second-round pick, and I don't know if a team like Houston... I don't know if he's worth that to Houston. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. For those that don't know, A.J. McCarron won 2 national championships at the University of Alabama, including pummeling my beloved Irish. What was it? 2 years? Well, I guess it was, 2 years ago at this point. And he's got a pretty hot wife too. That Brent Musburger, pervertedly fawned over during that game with Notre Dame.
That was fantastic.
Between Notre Dame and Alabama.
better looking than Teo's girlfriend.
Yes, because you could see through her. Sunday will begin in Minnesota, where the Seahawks kind of just sludge through the motions of a weather beaten game, and then came back in the fourth quarter, hung on for a 10-9 win over the Vikings, had the missed field goal late, but it was damn cold. But the champs gutted it out, the defending NFC champions gutted it out, and they're heading to Carolina. Test of metal, Cowboy, for Russell Wilson. I mean, he stepped up and played big.
Yeah, I mean, I Seattle didn't really win that game. I mean, Blair Walsh lost that game. It was freezing. It was a weather thing. I mean, Wilson didn't play very well. Adrian Peterson's fumble was ultimately what ended up being the difference in the game. I mean, Wilson's proven himself to me. He doesn't need to prove anything else. I mean,
right.
He threw one bad pass in the Super Bowl, but that guy's engineered a lot of comebacks, and he's never out of it. This game was a lot like, you know, kind of reminded you a little bit of the Packers game last year where they were just dead and came and they found a way to win. But I mean, poor Blair Walsh, that's just tough stuff right there. And the rest of the NFC, the teams remaining, must just be so pissed off that you had a chance to knock out. Yeah, I think if that game was played on like in the dome or on, you know, with reasonable weather, Seattle probably wins it by 3 touchdowns. It was just you couldn't do anything offensively, and it was just one of those games. And you know, you feel bad for Minnesota. And you know, I'm not a huge like Adrian Peterson the person fan, but he you know, great player, and to lose the game like that, it's just tough. It's just very, very tough.
But they're going to be a good team. I think they're going to continue to grow as a team. I think Teddy Bridgewater could continue to grow as a quarterback, and we'll see what happens next season for them.
I think it's more of a one-shot deal for them. I mean, I think it was Peterson. I mean, he's that good that him in a pretty good defense essentially carried them to the playoffs. And I mean, he's 30 years old. He's going to break down. I mean, if it's not next year, it's definitely the year after that, probably next year. I think it was you take him off that team and they're 6-10, 7-9.
Mm. Anything on that game, senior?
Well, you got to say that Seattle stole the game, and they're really fortunate to get by. But I'm going to give them a pass and blame the weather. You could see that the conditions definitely really bothered them. They're not going to have to play in those kind of conditions again. That was just crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But they're really, really fortunate. Obviously, extremely fortunate to still be playing. But that being said, I still consider them a major threat because of who they are, and I'm. You know, as a football fan who doesn't have a horse in the NFC race, I'm glad they won because it sure makes this weekend coming a lot better. You know, it wouldn't have been as interesting. I mean, that the game that they're in is the game of, you know, I mean, obviously all four games are good. This is the weekend coming up is the best weekend of football in the NFL. I feel like this round with four games. You know, last week was a little taste, but this round coming in with four games is just a fabulous weekend.
Yep.
And if you have to pick out one game and say game of the weekend before it starts, it's that one. And we wouldn't have had that matchup if they wouldn't have won.
Right. Exactly.
You know. So that I'm glad they won. They're certainly a threat, but yeah, they stole one. No doubt about it.
Yeah, they did.
Really, really fortunate. They stole one.
Yep.
Even if react real well to inhumane.
What's that?
As a Patriots fan, you were rooting for Seattle in that game?
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, as a Patriot fan, if we get to the Super Bowl, we're going to be playing either Seattle, Arizona, or Carolina. And I knew that going in, whether Seattle wins that game or not. I mean, any one of those three teams is going to be a major challenge. It doesn't matter which one it is.
I don't fear
Seattle more than I fear those other teams. And, you know, I totally respect Russell Wilson, even though he didn't have a good game in that game. I just want to kind of editorialize a comment that you made, Cowboy, where you said he threw one bad pass in the Super Bowl. I don't even hold that against him because I think that was more of a great up-and-coming young quarterback making an unbelievable play.
I agree, but it was also a terrible play call because you had a running back. That, well, we're not going to get into that now. It should just called a running play.
Talking about the throw. He threw it where it was supposed to. The guy just jumped the route and made an incredible play.
Yeah. If he had a better play caller, it wouldn't have mattered anyway. But yes, you're right. You're definitely right, senior. And then the late game Sunday, Packers advanced 35-18 over Washington. Redskins jumped out 11-0. The Packers chipped away and came away with the win. Before we talk about the Packers, was this kind of a coming out party per se for Kirk Cousins? You know, everybody was kind of always 50-50 with him. But he had a great game, threw for 329 yards, a couple touchdowns. Well, let's see. Did he have any touchdowns? Yeah, well, he had one bootleg touchdown. Then he threw one in the to Jordan Reed in the second quarter. So he didn't play awful. Was that a coming out party for him? Is that a guy that the Redskins now can finally say they can lean on for the future, senior?
Well, there's no doubt he's their quarterback. I mean, not just for that game, the way he played down the stretch of the season. I mean, he's a good NFL quarterback. I'm not saying he's a superstar or anything, but he's a good, solid NFL quarterback, which is more than we could say for what they had before him. He's their guy. We know it. And also, they also showed, you know, I don't think that much of this Green Bay team right now. Washington, I'm not just talking about Kirk Cousins. Their defense really isn't good. They're really not that good. You know, as far as I see Green Bay, this is as far as they're getting, because I said the NFC was about those other three teams. I think they're going to get walked on this week. But answering your question, is he absolutely? There's a lot of teams in the NFL that wouldn't mind having Kirk Cousins. You know, he's at least in the top half of quarterbacks in the NFL, no doubt about it. He's a good solid quarterback.
Yeah, here's a good stat. On nearly half of Kirk Cousins' dropbacks in the first half, the Packers blitzed. Here's a guy with composure. The Packers blitzed on nearly half of Kirk Cousins' dropbacks in the first half, and he was 6 of 8 for 90 yards and a touchdown. It's pretty good.
He's a good player, no doubt about it.
Yeah. On the other side of the coin, overcoming a bad first quarter, Aaron Rodgers was 1 for 8 in the first quarter. Second quarter alone, he was 14 of 20 for 148 yards and 2 touchdowns. So he pretty much recovered. Any thoughts on this one, Cowboy?
Yeah. I mean, to talk about Cousins, I mean, he didn't play very well in this game. I mean, he had a pretty good first half. But, I mean, Green Bay's defense isn't very good. And, I mean, a lot of those numbers were a little artificial as they were coming back in the second half. But I'll echo what Senior said. I mean, if you watch the guy and you watch them play this year, he's a good quarterback. He's a lot better quarterback than I thought he was. And he did a lot better than I thought he would. And, you know, they have a real quarterback. He's right up there, you know, kind of a Joe Flacco type of guy, right? He's, you know, most likely not going to lose you the game. And, you know, he's going to win you a few games. And that's a guy that if you surround him with the talent that you can win with. This game in particular, that they disappointed me, particularly defensively, like Senior said. The Green Bay offense has been stuck in the mud for the whole second half of the season. I mean, it's been a train wreck. And the Redskins were the right antidote, I guess, to get them going. They, you know, Rodgers obviously is a great player, but in general, all season, his receivers haven't been able to get open. The running game's been terrible, and he hasn't played that well lately, turning the ball over a lot more than he usually does. Their offensive line's a mess, and he's always, you know, constantly under pressure. But the Redskins were a real sieve in this game. And, Rodgers played well. He did what he was supposed to do. And, you know, the Redskins played like an 8-8 team or a 9-7 team, which is what they are. They just they benefited from a putrid division.
Yep,
they're not really a playoff team.
It was a putrid division. You're right about that. All right, so let's get into the weekend. We'll begin on Saturday, and why don't we dive in with the first game, the game you boys have on your hearts the most. Let's go to Gillette, where the AFC East champion New England Patriots will host Kansas City. Unique matchup for the Pats. The Chiefs, you know, obviously have won 11 in a row, but, and I've talked about this with my brother, a good hunk of those 11 wins are, you know, against a decent amount of scrubs. And I don't want to disrespect the Chiefs, but it's not like they played the Patriots for 11 straight weeks. I mean, they beat the Raiders twice, they beat the Chargers a couple times. I mean, nothing really earth shattering, but 11 wins in a row is 11 wins in a row. Obviously, the Pats are the team to beat right now. They do have some flaws. I'm going to flip the switch on both you guys. Senior, if you're Andy Reid, what do you do to beat this team? What's got to happen for you to beat them? I'm going to flip the switch on you. You're Andy Reid. You're walking into this building. What do you do to win this game?
You just play the way the Chiefs have been playing. I mean, I know how I feel about the game, but I'll answer your question first. Mm-hmm. It's the same formula for everybody, and you got the guys that can do it. You unleash your pass rush. You put a lot of pressure on Tom Brady. You don't worry too that much about the run because the Patriots aren't going to beat you running the ball. You don't turn the ball over. It's Chiefs formula. You don't turn the ball over. You make a few big plays here and there. The Patriot offense, in the last 6 weeks, hasn't done much of anything, and your defense is good enough to shut them down. And obviously, the way they've always been the way to slow down the Patriots' offense, like any other offense, but especially the Patriots offense, is to bang Brady around. Don't give him any time to throw the ball. So there's your formula. It's a simple formula. All they have to do is they have to play Chiefs football. That would be their formula to victory. Mm. You want me to give you my view of the game? I'm going to sound like a broken record.
You're like, all right, now I want to talk about the side I want to talk about. No.
It's what I've been saying for the last number of weeks, what the AFC comes down to in my mind. And part of it is because I see it from the Patriots' point of view, but in all honesty, it really is the point of view in the AFC. When you look at the teams in the AFC, if it's the real Patriots, no one can beat them. Mm-hmm. If it's the Patriots we've seen the last 6 weeks, they can't beat any of them. It all depends on the Patriots. The Chiefs aren't a mystery. We know what the Chiefs are bringing. Okay, they've got a few bumps and bruises, Macklin and stuff, but we know what they're bringing. The Patriots, if guys getting healthy, who's going to play? That's what it's all about. Okay, Edelman's going to play. Is he going to be Julian Edelman? Is he going to be able to make those cuts and get open early? It's looking like Sebastian Vollmer's probably going to play. Is that offensive line going to play a little better, or are they going to be the sieve that they've been? And certainly if Edelman's the real Julian Edelman, that takes a lot of pressure off the offensive line, because now Brady's getting the ball out in 2 seconds or less like he was earlier in the season, because Edelman has an incredible ability to get open really quick. And that takes some of the pressure off Gronk, and now we can run Gronk up the seam and he becomes more effective. Now everything becomes more effective if he's the real Julian Edelman. I'm going to bring you back to that Seattle game last week, because it's something that I said as a Patriot fan watching that game. We've all been saying, okay, everybody's been saying, if these guys all come back, Hightower also, the safeties come back, if everybody comes back, well, we're going to be fine. Well, coming back is one thing. Watching that Seattle game, Cam Chancellor was back from being out with a pelvis injury. You could make a case that he's the best at his position in the NFL, and I thought he played like a bum. I mean, he got beat by tight ends that he would never normally get beat by. He missed a few easy tackles where he's usually the surest tackler in the world. He wasn't Cam Chancellor, and coming back from an injury, you never know. Just because he was on the field, they didn't get Cam Chancellor back. So just because Julian Edelman's on the field, just because all these other guys are on the field, you know, Hightower, we saw 3 weeks ago, come back and play like a shell of himself, and he hasn't played since, you know. Mm-hmm. Devin McCourty, is he going to be the real Devin McCourty? Patrick Chung is going to be – they're all going to be on the field. How are they going to play? Are they going to be anywhere close to themselves? That tells the story of this game. If they are, the Patriots win. No doubt in my mind, they beat everybody in the AFC. If they're not, they lose this week, because – the team that's played the last 6 weeks isn't good enough to beat a playoff team. So that's how I see it.
All right, well, let's talk about the Pats defense. Cowboy, obviously Kansas City is not the kind of offense that's going to set the world on fire. They're very methodical. If Alex Smith doesn't make mistakes, you know, they'll score some points. But if the Chief defense struggles and Brady gets some throws off and the Pats jump out to a lead, can you see the Chief offense trying to keep pace here?
Yeah. I mean, we shouldn't gloss over Macklin's injury. I mean, he falls into that same category that Senior was just talking about. If Jeremy Macklin's been great through this whole run for them, and he's really their only weapon on the outside. If he's right, then they're a formidable offense, and they're the kind of offense that'll give the Patriots trouble, because they can run the ball. They can run the ball. Alex Smith doesn't really make mistakes generally, and kind of a safety first guy. But yeah, I mean, they've shown in other games that if they need to score, they can score. What we've seen from the Pats defense, I don't think the Pats defense are going to come in and shut them out or anything. It's a really tough game for me to call. I like the Pats. I think whoever wins this game goes to Denver and wins. But I like the Pats. I think, you know, Tom Brady, right? It's in Foxborough, which is huge. If the game was in Arrowhead, I would pick Kansas City. I think it's going to be similar to the not the last year's Ravens game, but the Ravens game where Cundiff missed the field goal at the end, where you're going to walk away saying, well, how did the Patriots win that game? They look like a shell. Because if the Patriots can get by this game, that's another week for these guys to get healthy. And they could get on, you know, they can get rolling a little bit. But it's tough. I mean, Edelman hasn't played in, what, 8 weeks? And, I mean, to come in off the couch like that, or out of the hospital bed, however you want to put it, is, you know, I mean, it takes a little bit to get your sea legs back. And this is a very, very tough game. If you think about the last time the Chiefs played the Patriots, it was brutally ugly. It was the apocalypse game from last year where we were on the sports lounge. We had somebody calling for a trade of Brady because the team was done. And you know, we know what happened there. But this, the Chiefs are a bad matchup for the Patriots. I'd rather have a team like Pittsburgh, a team with a leaky defense and a good offense than this team, because the Patriots offense hasn't been playing that well, and they're going to need to score some points to win the game. But I think it's going to be like a 21-17 kind of back and forth rock fight where the Patriots just find a way to win.
Hmm. Okay. I think
you can't let the Chiefs really jump out ahead of you, because they are at their best as a front runner just because of their style, you know.
And their pass,
they get out front,
they,
it plays into their conservative style. They get out in front of you, they can unleash the pass rush on defense, they can run the ball and be conservative on offense. So the Pats defense has to show up and keep it close. So we got to hope Hightower's more like himself, because he's as good a run stopper as there is in the NFL. You know, we got to hope Chung is really back, because again, he really supports the run really well, because the Pats have been having trouble stopping the run. You get those two guys back and you stop the run a lot better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's huge.
The Pats can't let them get up by like two touchdowns at the beginning of the game. That would be a disaster.
And I mean, it would be huge if Macklin's not right, which is
sure it looks like it's not going to be.
Well, you know, they say he's got a mild ankle sprain. That's what I read today. And you don't know how much of that's posturing. He's not practicing. But if he's not right, you can really focus on Kelce in the passing game, because the other receivers can't do anything. And it'll really help the Pats focus on the run game, focus on Kelce, and not worry about somebody who's going to take the top off the defense.
Yeah. The other thing you got to really focus on with the Chiefs, especially on like third down situations and stuff, is make sure Alex Smith doesn't run out of the pocket and beat you. He's broken some long runs this year. He's dangerous to go with the ball anytime. And in this kind of game where it's all on the line now, you know he'll take off at the drop of a hat.
And an 11-game winning streak, I don't care who you're playing in the NFL.
It's impressive. That's
11
right.
Game, you know, you can only beat who they put in front of you. And
correct.
11-game winning streak, I mean, this is the hottest team, you know, the hottest team in the AFC that they're playing right now. And it's the Chiefs and it's Reed, so people aren't giving them a ton of credit. But this is a very, very tough game. Mm.
Let's go to the night game out in the desert at the Toaster, as the Arizona Cardinals, as it's the 2-2 seeds on Saturday and the 2-1 seeds on Sunday, as the Arizona Cardinals will host the aforementioned Green Bay Packers, who beat Washington. Cowboy, the maligned Packer defense could be in trouble. Carson Palmer obviously will play. What does the Packer defense have to do to win this game? Because we'll get into the struggling Packer offense in a minute, but talk about the Packer defense and what they've got to do to stop Arizona.
They're not going to be able to. Mm. Point blank. I mean, the Arizona waxed them, and was it 3 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago?
Yeah.
And I mean, Arizona's got a very, very good offense, and they're not. The Packers defense isn't going to be able to stop them. Arizona's defense has shown some leaks, and Green Bay's hope is that it's a shootout and that Rodgers can win a shootout, which is not completely out of the realm of possibility. But I don't see. I mean, you say, what do the Packers have to do? Well, you know, first you have to stop David Johnson, which I don't think they can do. And then you also have to, I mean, Arizona's offense, I don't think anybody can really shut them down. I mean, Seattle did the last game of the season, but Arizona pulled their starters at halftime. And other than that, nobody shut them down. I mean, even Seattle, Arizona scored 38 points against the first time they played, 38 or 45 points. They don't have in front of me. So it's, if you're the Packers, you know, try to hold them to field goals, bend but don't break, because Arizona's offense is well-balanced. And they can beat you in a number of different ways, and there's not one guy to stop. You know, if you stop David Johnson, if you stack the box against him, well, now you have Larry Fitzgerald and John Brown and Michael Floyd running, you know, running the secondary. If you stop the pass, David Johnson has been just as good as any running back in the NFL in the second half of the season, and he'll run all over you. So it's tough. It's a tough game to see a path with the way Green Bay's offense has played the last half of the season. It's very difficult to see them winning this game. I mean, they have to essentially turn Arizona's defense into Washington's defense and put up those kind of numbers. It'll take at least 35 to beat Arizona. And Rodgers is capable, but, you know, with a healthy Jordy Nelson, maybe. But with the cast of characters he has out there, I don't think it's happening. Mm.
What do you think, Senior?
Blowout. This is the one game, the one stinker game of the weekend, really. I don't even see it as an interesting game. I'll come right out and say it. Packers have no chance.
Okay.
Arizona's going to rule all over these guys.
I got a great trivia question for you guys that involves these two teams. Both these teams are playing each other. And at least one of them is going to the NFC Championship. And they both lost a game by 30-plus points this year. Only three teams in Super Bowl history have won the Super Bowl after losing a game by at least 30 points in the regular season. And this is interesting because two of the three instances involve you guys, your team, on both ends of the spectrum. The first one was the 2012 Ravens, who lost by 30 or more, by more than 30 to Houston during the season. The 2003 Patriots, who got blown out, what was it, week one by the Bills?
Yep, 38-0.
38-0. And you should remember this one, Senior. You won't, Cowboy, because you were not alive yet. The 76 Raiders, their one loss was when they went up to old Sullivan and got mollywomped. If you remember that game, Senior?
Yeah.
50 to, and then, of course, and then...
Then we beat them in the playoffs.
Then the Sugar Bear happened. We won't get into that. But and the last one, the 94 Niners, lost by 30 or more to Philly. So four teams, the 2012 Ravens, the 2003 Patriots, the 94 Niners, and the 76 Raiders, all in the Super Bowl after losing a game in the regular season by at least 30. Both these teams lost a game by at least 30 in the regular season. Interesting footnote there. Also, this is... Carson Palmer's first playoff game since 2009 with the Bengals. Just wanted to throw that out there. Should be pretty interesting. But I kind of agree with you, Senior. I just can't see the Packers scoring enough points to keep pace here. I don't see it.
This is a mismatch.
It really is a mismatch.
The only thing is, it is Aaron Rodgers. And I think to say they have no chance is disrespectful of him. I mean, he is capable of winning a shootout. Arizona's defense has, I mean, Wilson torched them. Since they've lost Tyrann Mathieu, they haven't been as good, particularly against the pass. So it's not completely out of the realm of possibility. I think it's going to be a little bit closer than you do, Dad. I think.
I don't think so. Even if it's a shootout, and it's taken nothing away from Aaron Rodgers, but he's like a great marksman that doesn't have any bullets in his gun. That's what I've seen of that team this year. He just doesn't have the people around him. He doesn't have the weapons. You can be as good as you want. You gotta have somebody to get the ball to. Yep. I just don't see. I don't think it's possible. Mm. I really don't think it's possible. I mean, barring some kind of a flaky injury or something, you know, I don't think it's possible.
Mm.
If Palmer goes down or something, obviously.
I remember Tom Brady going into San Diego and beating a 14-2 number one seed with Rashay Caldwell as the number one receiver. So all things are possible with great quarterbacks.
Good point. That's an excellent point, Cowboy. I'm going to have to lean a little more towards Senior here. I think Aaron Rodgers will do the best he can, but I think the Cardinals jump out quick, and I don't know if they'll catch up. But we'll see. You never know. Let's go to Sunday. And the game that Senior mentioned earlier is almost like a heavyweight title fight here, because you got two legit beasts here down at Bank of America Stadium in Charlotte. The number one seed in the NFC, the Carolina Panthers, host the defending NFC champion Seattle Seahawks. Not only is this a matchup of two really great football teams, but it is a rematch of the divisional playoffs last year out at Quest, or whatever the hell they call that building now, where Cam Newton's season ended. So Cam Newton's got a little retribution on his mind Sunday afternoon. Senior, you are Seattle's defense. Can they stop Cam Newton?
Well, I don't know if they can. I don't know if either team can stop the other quarterback, but both defenses are good enough to slow the other guy down. You know, as good as these two guys have both been playing at a real high level.
Yep.
In fact, maybe the last 6 or 7 weeks, nobody's been playing better than Russell Wilson, really, other than last week. And I think you throw that one aside because of the weather. But Cam Newton's had an unbelievable year. You know, they're both the same type of quarterbacks, except Newton's a lot bigger and stronger. But, I mean, they both do the same kind of things.
Right.
Wilson right now is, I think, a little more accomplished throwing from the pocket. But not to say that Cam can't throw from the pocket. He can. This is a real hard game to call. You know, as a pure football fan, when you're not rooting for either team, it's going to be a great game to watch, because I would have a lot of trouble calling it. Both teams, you know, feature backs are a little banged up, and so it seems like you're really going to get it to come down to a battle of the two quarterbacks, the two best mobile quarterbacks that can do everything. The type of game they play, the two best at it that there is in the league. Both going up against a really good defense.
Yeah.
You know, those linebackers on the Carolina D are probably the best linebacking core in football, you know, and then they're going against Legion of Boom, who this year you can't run on them. So it's going to come down to the quarterbacks and who's going to play better. You know, you want to say in a game like this where you're flipping a coin, you kind of go with the home team. But if I have to pick it, I think I'm gonna pick the Seahawks, and I'm saying it because I'm seeing it as a battle of the quarterbacks, and I think Russell's a little bit more accomplished than Cam. So
okay,
it's crazy to say I like his receivers a little better, because they're not that great, but boy, he's made them look good. Doug Baldwin's been turned into this superstar receiver, you know.
78 catches this year, 14 touchdown catches. Very nice.
Second half of the season, he's gone completely off the charts. Yeah, it's a great game. I mean, and maybe it's going to come down to if either team can run the ball. I don't see either one of them running it really successfully. Mm. So that's why I see it as a battle of the quarterbacks. And so just looking at it that way, and it's crazy to say I like the guy that's not going to win the MVP over the guy that's going to win the MVP. But I honestly think Russell Wilson's a little bit more of an accomplished quarterback. He's the guy that can throw from the pocket a little better, and that's how you win in the NFL in the playoffs. So I'm going to take Seattle in a close game, but I think this is going to be just a great game to watch.
Cowboy, as I mentioned a moment ago, Cam Newton's coming in with a little chip on his shoulder after losing in the divisional playoffs last year to the Seahawks. What can he do against the Seahawks defense?
I mean, he can do what he did to beat them earlier this year.
Yeah.
I think, you know, not mentioning, you know, you mentioned Cam Chancellor, right? And how he's not himself. And if you think about
it, really wasn't. Yeah, that's a good point.
When if you think about their first game this year, Greg Olsen won them the game, and I agree. I like Seattle's wide receivers better, but Greg Olsen's the best pass catcher in that game, and it's not close for me. I mean, he's very, very, very good. And Cam Chancellor's a guy who would have to be on him a lot, right? And I really feel like this is Carolina's year. I feel like Cam's deserving of the MVP award. Great season. I think he's... Any naysayers for him now are just, they're blowing hot air. He's not a good quarterback. He's a great quarterback. He's every bit as good as Russell Wilson. And, you know, he's every bit as good as any quarterback in the league right now.
I agree.
And they're, you know, both, you know, the running back story is pretty interesting when you talk about running the ball, because you have both the feature backs are, you know, pretty highly questionable, Beast Mode and Stewart. Looks like Stewart is, I think they're both going to play. I think Stewart probably would be a little more effective. You just got, you know, a little less tread on the tires, right? Or a little more tread
right
on the tires. It's a nitpicky game. You know, it's in Carolina, and nobody's believed in Carolina. I feel like nobody, you know, people haven't, it took a long time for them to get the credit they deserved. They're loaded. They're absolutely loaded. It's in Carolina. They're the number one seed. They're going to win the game. And I hate to say this as a Patriots fan, but I look at this game, you know, how back in the day, whenever, you know, when the NFC was winning all those Super Bowls, the NFC title game, Cowboys 49ers was always the Super Bowl, because mm-hmm. you knew whoever won that game was going to win the Super Bowl by 30 points. And this game has that kind of feel to it for me. I think either one of these teams, the winner of this game is your Super Bowl champion, in my opinion. And again, I hate to say that as a Patriots fan, but I do like the Cardinals, but I think these two teams are, you know, especially over the second half of the season with Seattle, are operating on another level. And I think it's a treat in a way that we get to see the two best teams in the NFL play each other in the in the divisional round. But I really like Carolina in this game. I just think they're a better team. I just think they're a better team. I think they're better coached. I like Riverboat Ron. I think he's really assimilated well to what this team's strengths are. A team that can get third and fourth and short pretty much at will, and a team that converts inside the 5-yard line pretty much at will, because you have that beast back there at quarterback who is such a huge thing. They don't settle for field goals inside the 10. They're scoring touchdowns. Seattle doesn't have that. So Carolina by 10, 27-17.
Okay.
That's bold. Okay.
Okay. I agree with Cowboy. I like Carolina in this game too. I think Cam's going to have a big game. I think Russell Wilson's going to have a big game. But I think the Panther defense is going to, I think this is a field position game. I think the Panthers defense is going to set up the offense to not have to in good field position throughout the game. And I think short drives will be the statement of the day for the Carolina offense. That's what I think. But I like Carolina in this game. But I think they need to have a big lead. If this game is close in the fourth quarter, I never count out Russell Wilson. I think that if this game is a field goal going into the fourth quarter, I think you'd feel pretty good if you're a Seahawks fan. I think the Panthers, I'm not saying blow them out like Cardinals, like Senior says about the Cardinals, but if Carolina's up by, you know, 13 in the fourth quarter, I'd feel pretty good if I was a Carolina fan. But if it's, you know, 17-14 or 20-17, I'd be a little leery if I was a Panther fan, because Russell Wilson seems to always find a way. So I think that's,
I mean, their regular season matchup was the exact opposite of that. Seattle blew a double-digit lead in the fourth quarter.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this is a little I concur, but it's, you know, different stage. You have the, you know, two-time defending NFC champions against a team who is right on that cusp of greatness. So I think it'll be very interesting when you get to that fourth quarter.
And also, you can't discount the fact that Seattle has kind of peaked at the right time. You know,
mm-hmm.
maybe a team that two times defending conference champions wasn't really playing at their best for the first half of the season and kind of knew when to turn it on. You know, kind of like, okay, we've been here before. It's time now. I really like the way they've been playing lately. I mean, I think it's a great game. It's a game I'm really looking forward to watching, and it's really hard to call. I'm picking Seattle. I'm almost on a flip of a coin, but yeah, I'm basically picking Seattle on because of Russell Wilson.
Hmm.
And I'm not taking anything away from Cam Newton. I wasn't suggesting that I don't think he deserves the MVP. Absolutely. If I had a vote, he would get my vote as the MVP this season. I just think right now, in a playoff game, at this time in their careers, and the way Russell played the second half, if the MVP vote was for the last 7 or 8 games of the season, probably Russell Wilson would win it. So that's why I'm going with Seattle.
Final game of the weekend out at Invesco. The number one seed in the AFC, the Denver Broncos, host a banged up, and I mean banged up, Pittsburgh Steelers team. I mean, unless Mr. Miyagi does some of that magic work that he did on Danielson, Ben's shoulder is pretty shot. I mean, he was throwing ducks in that. And another thing the Bengals defense didn't note, I mean, he was throwing ducks in that last drive. I mean, every ball he was throwing was wobbly and had nothing on it. The guy's just got guts. But this is a fascinating football game. Break it down, Cowboy. What do you think of... then is this a slam dunk then for Denver?
I don't think it's a slam dunk because Manning's playing. I think it's a slam dunk because Pittsburgh's a shell. If Roethlisberger might not play, and if he plays, it's just an indictment on Landry Jones. I mean, the guy, you know, unless Roethlisberger's full of it, I mean, he's got torn ligaments in his shoulder. He's not going to be able to throw the ball more than 15 yards downfield. And their defense certainly isn't going to keep them in the game. Their defense stinks. It's in Denver. I would say the only chance Pittsburgh has is that you would get like a Manning from earlier in the season where he throws two or three pick sixes. But they'll get him out of there before they let that happen. So I know, Senior, you'd said Arizona-Green Bay was the biggest joke of a game. I think this game's a blowout. I think Denver just waxes Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh without Roethlisberger, a complete shell, and possibly without Antonio Brown, is not a very good football team, and no D'Angelo Williams. So this great offense is missing its three best players, and Denver's defense, that's the one thing about Denver that's been for real all season, is their defense, and Pittsburgh's not going to go into Mile High and score enough points to win the game. No way. Denver's offense has been playing better. I think Manning manages the game, and it does. You know, he'll probably look good because Pittsburgh's pass defense sucks so bad. It's just a bad game. It's just going to be a bad game. 30-3 or something like that would be my prediction.
What do you think, Senior?
Well, if Ben is, his shoulder is that bad and he's throwing the ball like he did in that last drive, then I would say the two starting quarterbacks would have the same arm strength, because that's about Peyton's arm strength right now. I won't say it. I won't stoop to saying something about his recovery. But
you're so cruel.
Really?
Obviously, it didn't work.
Really, I would consider that equal as far as that part of the matchup goes. Right. The difference is, obviously, you give Denver the edge because Denver's got one of the best defenses in the NFL, and Pittsburgh's defense is terrible. Denver's really fortunate that Cincinnati didn't win. In all honesty, Cincinnati would have been a tough matchup for Denver because Cincinnati's got a pretty good physical.
Cincinnati
defense.
Wouldn't have played Denver, Senior.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's
no,
right.
That's Cincinnati would have gone to
Kansas City.
Foxborough.
That's a good point. Kansas City would have rolled all over them. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Kansas City would have beaten them. That's a good point. But, you know, unless Ben gets some magical cure and he's not as bad as he's saying, and if Pac-Man Jones is right that and what the knucklehead said, and he was made fun of for this. He said when he was in saying that he faked the injury, he said he should have gotten a Grammy Award. And if you saw what Antonio the next day did, some kind of a little video of himself as a musician to make fun of Pac-Man, and he posted it on Instagram or something of him lip syncing or something like he's winning a Grammy. Of course,
that's funny.
Yeah, that's that shows you how smart Pac-Man is. But yeah, unless it's Pac-Man's right and Antonio's fine, you know, if he gets through the concussion protocol and he's fine, and if Ben has some arm strength, and then the Steelers can play with him. If it's the real Steelers offense, then they could make the game interesting if they get anything out of their defense. Because, you know, yeah, okay, Pittsburgh's defense is bad, but Denver's offense isn't real good. You know, let's face it, that's not a good offensive team. No, it's kind of a stinker game, really. Where,
I mean, you know, their game a few weeks ago was a great game. A lot of offense.
Yeah, so Denver's
proven they can score on Pittsburgh.
Yeah, but that was a quarterback who could throw the ball downfield. You know, this might be different with Peyton, man. Peyton playing, it's going to be a lot of running. I mean, that's what he mostly did, right? When he came in and engineered the comeback, he pretty much handed off. He threw a few passes, but it was mostly all of a sudden he came in and they got the running game going. You know, so, you know, Peyton is a question mark big time. I mean, I don't know what to expect from him.
And I mean, I think if he looks like the Peyton before the trip to the
against any defense, he'd have trouble. That's right.
No. And I mean, I think they'll get him out of there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy to say that Peyton Manning's on a short leash, but If he looks like the noodle arm like that, I mean, Osweiler's shown he can throw on this team.
Yeah, but they might take a little time doing it. It's going to be hard to, you know, you're lifting Peyton Manning.
I think Peyton's relatively healthy, and I think that the time off's what he needed. And, you know, he doesn't have a great arm by any stretch, but I think he's just serviceable enough that it's, you know, it's – I don't see Pittsburgh having any chance at all in this game. At all.
We're assuming that Roethlisberger is not going to be able to throw the ball when we say that. If, let's just say by some miracle that Ben's okay, would that change your opinion?
Yes. Okay. I would still pick Denver to win the game, but I would say it would be a close game. But okay. Ben's not okay.
Yeah, because I certainly don't question his toughness. He's as tough as they come. But yeah, that doesn't make you able to throw the ball. That's a good point.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, and if you said even without Antonio Brown, if Roethlisberger was 100%, I would give them a chance to win the game. But, you know,
he's obviously not going to be 100%. But maybe we'll see more from his arm. They're going to shoot him up with all kind of painkillers and stuff. You know. Maybe we'll see more from him than we expect. Maybe he'll be 85%.
Can you really? I'm not a doctor. Can you really do that in the throwing arm?
That's what I'm hearing. That they're going to shoot him up with stuff.
I mean, that's got to have some effect. Right?
Yeah. That is kind of nuts.
Yeah. I mean, just the fact that he came back in that game was pretty impressive.
They didn't want to put him back in that game.
No, you know he wanted in. Yeah.
Andre Jones is just a total stiff.
It was just another nice show by the Cincinnati fans, huh? I thought the game was in Philadelphia.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to get from you, senior.
Throwing stuff at a guy as exactly. He's being carted off the game off the field on a golf cart. Great job, Bengal fans.
Yep, stay classy.
You know, you're taking the personality of Vontez Burfict on to your fan base.
Then there was the guy who, did you hear about this? The Bengal fan who unzipped and pissed in front of the guy in front of him, right in the stands.
Yeah, that's a beautiful thing.
That's
yep.
Classy.
Yep. As I said, it's Philadelphia all over again.
Yep. Ugh.
Philadelphia, one of their famous ones, was the guy sticking his finger down his throat and puking on the 11-year-old girl in front of him that was a Redskin fan or something.
Yeah.
In the game.
You get that kind of stuff everywhere.
In Philly, yeah. Well, what and if you hear it, they play it all the time. When the guy did that, the person on the newscast that night on the Philadelphia TV station, the sportscaster said, "This may have been the worst moment by a Philadelphia Eagle fan. May have been."
Hey,
if that's not a slam dunk, what could possibly?
I know.
I've heard some stories from you, senior, stuff that you've witnessed in Patriot Nation.
We had our moments back in the day.
All right. Well, we'll break it all down at the end of the weekend on our next episode. We'll break down and prepare you for the conference championships. So let's take a break here on the Sports Evolution. When we come back, we'll dive into some college hoops, talk about our Friars in a bowling shoe ugly game earlier in the week. But a win's a win. And we'll talk other Big East Hoyas laid a beating down at the Garden tonight against St. John's, and we'll talk about some other. One of the greatest college basketball games I ever watched a week ago, and talk about other things going on around college hoops. Talk a little baseball. I want to get my little Mike Piazza moment in. And of course, talk about Junior, two new members of the Hall of Fame, and a little boxing, a little UFC, a little bit of everything. More Sports Evolution after the break.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation, placetobenation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes and placetobenation.com. You can check out Scott Criscolo and me on The Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, home of great interviews and our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. If you need your fix of current wrestling talk, we have plenty of options for you, including Main Event, which features a roundtable discussion led by PTBN analysts and special guests, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, including immediate feedback and discussion for WWE, NXT, Ring of Honor, and New Japan Super shows. Also, be sure to relive wrestling's past with Graham Cawthon's excellent exclusive History of Wrestling podcast, Phil Schneider's Digging in the Crates, and our monthly pay-per-view rewind roundtable series led by Ben Morse. And join Pro Wrestling Only's Will and I on the Dangerous Alliance podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. Sports fans have plenty to enjoy as well. We featured the Sports Evolution Mega Show with Scott, Dr. G, Cowboy, and Cowboy Sr., the Kings of Sport, led by Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, as well as the NBA Team Podcast, which takes a year-round deep dive into pro hoops, and the TJ McClune Show, featuring great guests from around the world of sports journalism. PTBN also proudly features the Richard the Mailman Podcast, specializing in the world of TV, thought leadership, anger, and irreverence. As mentioned, all these shows available on PlayStation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. PTBN also is a home to tremendous in-depth features on pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, Scott Keith's RSPWFAQ.com blog, and Piledriver.net.
PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network.
We got a lot of great shows about pro wrestling, and we put them all on one feed that you can find wherever you listen to podcasts. iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, or, of course, at PlaceToBeNation.com.
Pro Wrestling Only, Place to Be Nation, Podcast Network.
There's a lot of podcasts out there, but you won't find the historical depth, analytical insight, and great debate anywhere else. From old school wrestling talk to current day reaction shows, there's something for everyone.
PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network.
Oh, and check out our complete archive at placetobenation.com. Just click on the podcast logo for links to all of our shows, as well as subscribing options. Place to Be Nation, the only place to be for pro wrestling podcasts.
And welcome back, Place to Be Nation, to Sports Evolution, Scott Criscolo and the Cowboys, Senior and Junior. PlaceToBeNation.com, your home for everything pop culture. Great article today. Well, great articles every day, but a great one today. Chad Campbell, Wrestling with Expectations, talking about some of the wrestling he's watched over the past few weeks and his expectations for 2016 in the wrestling business. Place to Be Nation's excellent WWE Network adventure continues. Myself, my man JR, my PIC, Jason Greenhouse, Chad and Dan McGinn, continuing our quest through the WWE Network and all of its footage. And this week, World Class Championship Wrestling from February 26th, 1983. Glenn Butler with his Wednesday Walk Around the Web. Newest episode of the Pro Wrestling Super Show, Stephen Graham and Ted Livingston, part two of their top 100 matches of all time, 50-1. Chris Jordan, Stranger Things, January's greatest matches in his eyes. newest NBA team podcast, Sink or Swim, Adam Murray and Andrew Reich, analyzing the futures for a particular group of players, GMs, and organizations in a game of buy or sell. And, of course, Mr. Bayless has his Raw Rundown and the newest episode of Between the Sheets, January 5th through the 11th, 1994. Chris and David joined by Tom Green of the Full House podcast. PlacementNation.com, your home for everything pop culture. Of course, click on the Amazon link on the right. So anything you buy, we get a piece. Help run the site. Thank you. And Justice and Justin's in my ebook on the Vintage Vault Refreshes, the Federation Years from WrestleMania 1 till Survivor Series 1992. You click on that. Get it for absolutely free. PlacementNation.com, your home for everything pop culture. All right, guys, let's go from the gridiron to the hardwood and College Hoop Nation as we are deep into the conference schedule. And, of course, the one team we all love, and that is the beloved Friars of Providence, did dip a bit in the polls after losing to Marquette in a great game. And they dropped in the coaches' poll, they dropped to 12, which is what I actually predicted. I said they were going to drop from 8 to 12, and they did. And they're also 12 in the AP poll as well. But came back with a gutsy win out in Omaha the other night, 50-48 over Creighton on KD's big shot late. Yes, it was kind of a dumpster fire of a game, but a win's a win. We don't care about style points. That's a big win, I think, guys. What do you think, Senior? That's a big win. Coming off I don't say bad. It wasn't bad, but coming off a tough loss to Marquette, who played their butts off in that game, and to come out, go out on the out to the Midwest, play an ugly basketball game, both teams, but then KD stepped up at the end, big shot, great recovery game for the Friars after losing to Marquette.
Absolutely. It was a character win.
Yep, I agree.
I mean, they certainly did play awful offensively, both teams. But, you know, I know coaches always love those kind of wins. When you win ugly, when everything's going wrong and the whole game long, but the guys don't quit. They just keep digging in on the D and keep themselves in the game. Then they go play a good spurt in the last 5 minutes. Chris makes a big shot at the end and they win. Also, last night, Five top 25 teams went on the road, four lost, and the Friars won. So it's crazy how huge a difference it is to win that game by two or lose it by two, but it's a ginormous difference. Yep. Friars were underdogs. Creighton has been playing very well lately. They were 3-1 in conference, and they're almost impossible to beat at that CenturyLink Center. I believe in the last 10 years, they have the sixth best home record in the country. It's just a brutal place to play. They have great fans.
Yes, they do.
Seats 21,000. They have bananas. I mean, what else is there to do in Omaha, right? So they get everybody till June. To come out.
Until June when the College World Series comes in. Yeah, you know?
It. So they got a good team. It's a hot. So at the end, I know we all looked at it as an ugly game, and it was. I mean, the offenses, I mean, I say we dug in on the D, but they also contributed by missing a lot of easy shots. They helped us out. But basically, at the end of the year, when the committee's looking at things, that's a great road win. That's all it is a great road win. You won over there. That's a great road win. And now they come home Saturday for a big game against a Seton Hall team that's dangerous. There's no easy games in conference.
Nope.
And Seton Hall's kind of schizophrenic. Very, very talented. They kind of don't seem to show up every night. Our guy Joe Hassett says they seem to have trouble playing together. I don't know. In the loss to Creighton, Creighton buried them surprisingly at Seton Hall last Saturday. And Whitehead, who's their best player, Seton Hall's best player, Willard had him on the bench most of the game. So there was something going on there.
Wow, they've had issues. I mean,
he's a good coach, and he's not gonna he didn't take the guy out. You know, didn't say anything publicly, but there was something going on there. But, I mean, I'm still worried about the game because I know they're a dangerous team. And then after that, they play three ranked teams in a row. It's, I believe,
Butler. Oh, no, this is a gauntlet. Here's the gauntlet for PC after Seton Hall. They are home to Butler, who's ranked 23rd. They're at Nova next Saturday. I'll actually be at I'll be in Rhode Island for that game.
Who's as good as anybody in the country.
They absolutely will. Then Tuesday, they are home for Xavier, and then that Saturday, they are at Georgetown.
So it's not gonna get much tougher than that.
Yeah, yep. That's a gauntlet. And then it gets back a little cakey on February 2nd when they're at DePaul. So Butler, after the Seton Hall game, Butler, Nova, Xavier, and Georgetown all in a row. That's a gauntlet.
Don't discount the Seton Hall game either. That's not an easy one to lead into it.
Not at all.
But it makes the game extremely important.
Yeah.
Obviously, you don't want to lose at home to Seton Hall going into that stretch of four games. Yeah. So. And if you saw some of the midseason awards, I'm taking pride as a Friar fan here. NBC gave their midseason awards. They named Chris Dunn the National Player of the Year in midseason.
Yep.
They named the Ben Bentel Most Improved Player in the Nation. Chris, first team All-American. Ben, third team All-American. Not too shabby.
No, not too shabby at all. I love Ben.
Sporting News named Chris first team All-American midseason. So. They know who we are, you know.
Yep.
Little Providence College is out there, and everybody in the country knows who we are, and we're really taking a lot of pride in it.
Yep, absolutely. And being a Big East guy myself, I know. I mean, the Hoyas are my team, but I will always love the Friars because I know guys that went there back in the '90s, and it's my favorite conference. I root for everybody. So
as a season ticket holder to the Fairfield Stags. Oh, hey, I'm this is a serious comment.
Okay.
I mean, you don't know how close you came. If you would if Ed Cooley would have stayed on, you would have had Chris Dunn. Chris was going to Fairfield. Cooley had him going to Fairfield.
That would have been ridiculous.
The only reason Chris Dunn came to Providence was because Coach Cooley came over here.
Yep.
Wouldn't that have been something? I mean, that in itself is the statement to me that I pray that this guy never leaves. If you could recruit a McDonald's All-American to go to Fairfield,
I agree.
You've got something going on. You've got these kids identifying with you. So yeah,
I can't see.
I love Coach Cooley.
I do too. I love him to death. I broke my heart when he left, and I knew he was going to leave. I knew he was going to leave. And Sidney Johnson, who's the head coach of Fairfield now, I mean they've had some big wins, not a lot. He's struggled at times. His substitution methods befuddle me, but. I loved watching Ed Cooley coach, and I still love watching him coach now. I mean, this was his dream job to coach the Friars. I mean, the only way that he would ever leave is if, like, so you know, Roy Williams retires and he'd offer him the Carolina job or some crazy thing. I mean, otherwise, this was his gig. He wanted to be. I mean, you know, he's from there. He's from North Providence. So, I mean, his dream was to coach the Friars, and he is. So I agree with you, Senior. I could never see him leaving. I mean, on his own volition, anyway.
Well, I think they all. You know, we've heard that song before, but with him, obviously, it's more legit. The dream
I think
job
so.
Thing because he went to Central High, but still, I think to keep him, number one, you're going to have to pay him.
Oh, of course.
What they pay him now, but you're going to have to pay him like he's a top 10, like one of the best coaches in the country.
Yep.
And then maybe, just maybe, we could get him to stay. And what a lot of the guys that we go to the games have been saying, he could be the new Calhoun. You know what I mean?
He absolutely could.
How Connecticut ruled Northeast basketball for quite a while because of Calhoun.
Yep.
Well, this guy could settle in at PC, and we could be the kings of the Northeast like UConn was. And, man,
yeah.
that's a nice scenario. No, we got. I'll give you another. And these are just crazy little stories. But when I mentioned Calhoun – I post stuff on social media about Cooley a lot because I love him. And a guy I know that works at Little UMass Dartmouth, a little Division III school near here,
oh, yeah.
posted a picture of him the other day when he was the assistant coach there to a guy named Brian Batiste, who was considered a legend in local D3 circles.
Right.
So that's where Ed started. Then he went to Little Stonehill D2 near here.
Yep, I know Stonehill.
Calhoun coached for a year. At a high school that's about 5 miles from my house, Westport, Mass., a Division IV high school in Massachusetts. Calhoun coached them for a year, and they didn't win a game.
I know. Isn't that crazy? Wow. Yeah. Yep. And, of course, he went to Northeastern, and then the rest for Calhoun is history.
Great stories.
Though. Yeah, that is funny. Stonehill's actually in my conference. My alma mater, University of New Haven, the NE10. That's my alma mater. Oh. And that's JR's alma mater, the Greyhounds of Assumption.
Assumption. It's a great D2 athletic conference.
Love it. Love that conference.
That's really good D2 in all sports, really.
Yes, yes. Their hoops are good. Their volleyball is fantastic. My alma mater, UNH Chargers, their volleyball team is always very good.
I know all about their volleyball really well, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, no, it's a great conference. And I mean, they lost a bit when Bryant went D1
yeah.
a few years
ago. Yeah, I know.
But they're still a very good D2 conference.
Yeah, they are. They are. I saw, and there's been a lot of great D1 hoops the last couple weeks, but no game I've seen over the last 10 years was better than that game last Monday night out at the Fieldhouse in Lawrence between Oklahoma and Kansas. I mean, that was a ridiculous basketball game. Triple overtime. The Jayhawks escaped to take nothing away from Lon Kruger and the Sooners. I mean, that was just a fantastic basketball game, and they'll play again in about a month.
You get one playing too, and they advertise it, and the game goes off beyond as advertised. Yeah, that was great. And if you saw last night, number one Kansas lost to West Virginia.
Yes.
Our boy Huggy. And yeah. This was at West Virginia, which is a brutal – it just shows you what life on the road is. You know, that's just a brutal, brutal place to play.
Yeah.
But now West Virginia's next game, they go to number two Oklahoma.
Yep.
So yeah. That's going to be an interesting scenario to watch.
Big 12 top to bottom is probably the best conference in the country.
Yeah,
and tonight we had an upset down at Clemson. Ninth-ranked Duke lost by 5 tonight to Clemson.
Life on the road.
Life on the road. Oklahoma.
South Carolina was losing to somebody on the road tonight.
They're getting crushed, South Carolina. Alabama's beating them in Tuscaloosa by 24 right now, 56-32. Nova up 14 on Marquette with about a little over a minute to go.
But they're home.
They're home.
Nobody's winning on the road. It's unbelievable. That's why I say that was such a huge win last night.
Yeah, no, exactly. Big win for PC. And right now, at the moment, Nova undefeated. At 4-0 as we're speaking right now. Georgetown's 4-1, which I didn't even realize that. And then Xavier and PC at 3-1. So that was a big win over Creighton because Creighton's now 3-2 in conference. They'd have been flip flops. So that's a big, big win.
Yeah, they got a good team.
They got a big win for the Friars. So, but of course, things are still filling out in the conference. Looking ahead, like I said, the Friars have themselves a pretty big gauntlet after this game against Seton Hall on Saturday. And Seton Hall, it's a big game as well. No doubt about it. So, Cowboy, we have got ourselves a well. Let's talk about before we get to that. Obviously, in baseball, last week the Hall of Fame announcements happened. Two guys in the Hall of Fame: Ken Griffey Jr., who set the all-time record with 99.3% 99.3% of the vote. Three guys did not vote for Ken Griffey Jr. Now, a lot of people have told me and. They shouldn't even announce the percentage. Just say they're in. Because what's the difference? You know what I'm saying? And we sit and we talk about a lot of, you know, who are these three idiots and that kind of thing. And then, of course, Mike Piazza as well. And that one means a lot to me because, I never expected when I was a Met fan in the late 90s, or Met fan my whole life, I never expected them to ever make a deal like that. After the, you know, the great teams of the late 80s, and then they went through, you know, most of the 90s were just utter dreck. But I'll never forget that May day in 1998 when we got the pretty much at the time the league's best catcher, and he got us back-to-back playoff spots, went to the World Series. Lifted the city after 9/11 with a big home run against the Braves. While the Mets were still in the pennant race at the time, they were only 2.5 games behind the Braves. They died out, and the Braves won the division, but. He's a guy that'll always have. I'll always have a soft spot for, and I'm hoping to go in July to the Hall of Fame to see him get inducted. So, Cowboy, your thoughts on both these guys? I mean, these were no brainers.
Yep, both very, very well deserving. Couldn't be happier for both guys.
Yeah, Senior, same thing.
Same thing.
Absolutely, absolutely. And a little question for you, Scott.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, absolutely both deserve it. You know, some of it's eye test. You know, you look at those two guys, you remember seeing them play, and you say, when you saw him play, that guy's a Hall of Famer. There's just some guys you just know.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to talk about somebody who I don't think is a Hall of Famer, but first I'm just going to ask you a little question because I know you're going to like saying the name if you know the answer. I'm pretty sure you do.
Okay.
For percentage of votes, whose record did Griffey break?
Ah, the franchise. Tom Seaver, of course.
Tom Terrific.
Tom Terrific, and I never thought it'd be broken. Never. Of course, you know, we have when the doctor comes back on the show, he's on work hiatus at the moment, but when he returns, he'll tell you that there are a lot of Yankee fans who are a little presumptuous to think that, that both Mariano and or Jeter will go in unanimously, and I don't think anybody will ever go in unanimously. But if you ask me if one of those two guys would, I would say Mariano more than Jeter, because I think Jeter has a few more sports writer, you know, issues than Mo did. But in any event, I never thought, honestly, Senior, that the Tom Terrific's record. And here's an interesting story, and I need to read it now. I don't know if you know the Senior, to continue that. Now, the number of votes change. The number of votes you need change based on, number of sports writers and that kind of thing.
Right.
So this is an interesting trivia question here. Let me see if I can officially find it. Oh, here we go. All right. Seaver was elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame January 7th, 1992. He received the second highest percentage of votes, 98.84%, because Junior broke the record, of course. Let's put it this way. At the time, it was 430 votes, and Seaver got 425. Now, since then, it's gone up from 430 to 440, and Junior got 437. So, which broke the record of both higher than Nolan Ryan's percentage and Ty Cobb's percentage. Now, listen to this. Five guys, obviously, did not vote for Seaver. Here's why. I don't know if you know this or not. Three of them handed their ballots in blank because they were protesting Pete Rose not being on the ballot.
What morons.
One ballot was sent by a writer who was recovering from open heart surgery and didn't see Seaver's name. I don't know why he even was eligible to vote. And the fifth no vote was a guy who never votes for anybody in their first year. And in my opinion, that guy should have his vote revoked, because that's just ridiculous. What is this, hazing? I mean, seriously. So those were the five reasons, the five votes, guys who did not vote for Tom Seaver. Three of them were because they were protesting Pete Rose, which is utterly stupid. Then the other guy who probably was on whatever medication, and then the other guy because, you know, that ridiculous hazing thing. Nobody should go in there first time. What difference does it make? You know, utterly ridiculous. Anyway, after you mentioned Seaver, I thought you'd get a kick out of that. Now, you were going to mention a guy who you think doesn't belong in.
Right. The guy that almost got in, that is probably going to get in next time around. And it's my thought of that guy's a Hall of Famer. Tim Raines was a very good baseball player. He's not a Hall of Famer. It's ridiculous if he gets in. It's totally because of longevity, I guess, if you look at the total stats added up. Okay, all I have to say is one thing. His last 15 years in baseball, I know he played 23 years, and you might want to discount the end as he was old, but he went 15 consecutive years, his last 15 years, without making an all-star team. I consider the Hall of Fame way, way, way beyond being an all-star. How can you be a Hall of Famer? It's ridiculous that he's going to get in. I don't understand it. If you look at his stats, there's guys like, they were comparing his stats to a guy like Kenny Lofton, and it's almost a mirror image. I mean, I'm not saying he wasn't a good player. I mean, there's a lot of very good players, you know, they're not Hall of Famers. I mean, the Hall of Fame is like a click above being a very good player. It's special. It's really special. I don't see how Tim Raines can be a Hall of Famer. I don't know how anybody can make a case for him.
The only thing I could see, I mean, 808 stolen bases is a pretty good stat.
Yeah, but in 23 years.
Well, that's true too. That is true too. Yeah, and honestly,
it's a great stat, but you went 15 years that you weren't good enough to be an all-star.
Well, the other
last 15 years.
The other funny thing too, Senior, is I'm looking at his stats. After 1990, when he left the Expos and went to Chicago, he pretty much turned into a part-time player.
Yeah, I mean, this guy's not a Hall of Famer. I mean, I don't understand how he's so close. I don't get it.
I don't either.
It makes no sense to me.
Yeah, I don't
either. It's just strictly longevity. Okay, yeah, you look at some of those numbers, okay, because you played so damn long. You know, and even you might have said that about Craig Biggio, but Biggio's numbers are more impressive than Raines.
Well, and he was, I mean, here's a rock-solid guy who played second base consistently and caught early on in his career.
And the numbers are better too. You know, yeah. I know a lot of it with him is longevity too, and there's something to be said for longevity, but most of Raines' longevity was as, okay, you might say an above-average player. You can't say much, much better than that. Like you said, he wasn't even playing every day.
No, but midway through his 5-year run, He was with the White Sox from 91 to 95. Because I know for a fact, by the time he got to the Yankees in 96, he was not an everyday player.
No, definitely not. And so with the White Sox, too, he wasn't that good. I'm not being an idiot saying Tim Raines was a bum or anything like that, but Hall of Fame is a real special thing.
Right.
You know, like we said, they don't all have to be Griffey Jr. I understand that. There's some Hall of Famers that are up at another level. But,
now,
you know, we're talking like Mike Piazza. I mean, come on. Tim Raines? Give me a break. He's not a Hall of Famer. And I think he's going to get in the next time.
Well, he finished fourth at 69.8%. Jeff Bagwell got third at 71.6%. But I'm looking at the list now. Let's talk about the two bugaboo guys, and that's Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds. Now, Mark McGwire, this is his 10th. He's got, I think, what, 5 left, or are you only on for 10 years? Are you on for 10 years or 15 years?
He's definitely not going to 15. He's not going to get there.
No, right. Mark McGwire in his 10th year got 12.3%. He's never going to get more than that. But two guys whose percentages actually went up, Barry Bonds, 44.3%. And Roger Clemens, 45.2%. Now, they've consistently been in the 30s. They have 11 years left. Cowboy, could they catch up and before all said and done, are they going to get in?
I think they should. I mean, I'm in the camp that they should both be in. You know, I'm in the everybody was doing it camp.
Well, that's let me ask you this then. Then I'm gonna piggyback that, because if that's the case, then I think, and we're talking about stats, Senior, I don't think there's any doubt that Mike Mussina belongs in the Hall of Fame. Because here's a guy who put up an ERA under 4. He won 270 games, struck out almost 30, I don't know what his strikeout number, a little under 2,800. He wasn't a big strikeout guy. But he won 19 games consistently. And this guy was in the American League in the late 90s, mid to late 90s and early 2000s, when pretty much half of every American League lineup was on Sauce in some capacity. I mean, those Cleveland Indian teams, those Texas Ranger teams, I mean, those guys, I mean, those lineups were scoring 1,000 runs, and God only knows what any of them were on. And so I think what you were, to piggyback what you just said, Cowboy, I most certainly think that Mike Mussina belongs in the Hall of Fame, because to put up those kind of numbers, I mean, the average, I mean, in those years, the average, the league ERA was like 4 or 5. I mean, during those years, if you had an ERA of like 4-1, you had a great season. Now, of course, pitching is dominating again. But back in those years, if you had an ERA of like 4-1-5, you were pretty good. And his consistently was in the 3.7, 3.8, which is pretty good for the American League in the late 90s and early 2000s, when you had boss Yankee lineups, boss Red Sox lineups, Texas, Cleveland, Oakland, the Angels. I mean, I'm not just talking about you know, lineups with guys on roids. I'm talking about just great lineups in general. And this guy was consistently winning between 15 and 19 games. You know, good ERAs, strikeouts, good whips. He didn't walk a lot. And
in the AL East most of his career.
Exactly. So, in my opinion, there's no doubt that I think Mike Mussina belongs in the Hall of Fame. And he got 43%. I think his numbers are going to go up as time progresses. He still has 12 years left. So,
and man, Curt Schilling. I think Curt Schilling's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, I think he is too. He got 50.
When you add on what he did as a postseason pitcher, as a money pitcher, you know, when things are on the line, you add that on top of his statistics, you know.
Trevor Hoffman.
Guy's got kind of an abrasive personality, and I think that hurt. That can hurt him in the voting.
Completely agree, Shane.
That shouldn't matter,
completely,
you know. Agree.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of guys that have abrasive personalities, and they seem to shake it off. So, I mean, Ted Williams.
Schilling's done. I mean, I think the stuff Schilling's said and done since he retired is keeping his voting percentage down.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. But 3,000 strikeouts, 216 wins, ERA of 3.5. Again, another guy during years where lineups were. I mean, pitchers. Now that we're getting into that window, pitchers that were pitching in the mid to late 90s that put up. I mean, Randy Johnson. Just fathom his numbers. And there's another guy. Now, he pitched most of his career in the National League, which admittedly the lineups were not as beefy as the AL ones were. I mean, if it, late 90s, early 2000s, Cardinal lineups were good. You know, Mets lineup was pretty good. The Braves lineup was good. You know, so it wasn't, they weren't as good. I mean, if Randy Johnson had a majority of his career like Mike Mussina, where he had to face Texas, Cleveland, the Red Sox, the Yankees, the A's, the Angels at least three times a season, maybe he doesn't have those kind of numbers. But, I mean, either way, he still belongs in. But I really do think Mike Mussina belongs in. But
that's your argument for why Pedro Martinez is the best pitcher of all time.
Pedro Martinez definitely is a candidate for one of the best pitchers of all time. The only issue with Pedro is that his window was so short. I mean, the only problem, and it wasn't really Pedro's fault. It's just, you know, physics. But, you know, he was not the sturdiest guy. He was a small, skinny guy. And sometimes when you spend those years throwing the ball as hard as you can, you break down. And but again, it doesn't matter. Pedro's in and he deserves it because the small window. I mean, you can say the same about Sandy Koufax. He's in the Hall of Fame and he pretty much got in on 5 years. Pedro got in on about seven.
Pedro was at his best.
He was unhittable.
Best I ever saw.
Yeah, he's unhittable. He was unhittable.
I've seen a lot of baseball.
Yep. I think to me, the Pedro moment, and I wish he did more for the Mets, but the Mets got him more pretty much so they could put butts in the seats more than his actual ability because he was pretty much cooked by 2005. The greatest Pedro I think I've ever seen was that game five of the 99 division series when he came out like a gunslinger against the Indians and retired like 15 guys in a row or something ridiculous like that. And the Red Sox won that series.
That was great.
Yeah. So, it'll be interesting to see over the next few years. Again, Clemens and Bonds each have 11 years left of eligibility. And Clemens this year got 45.2 and Bonds got 44.3. But anyway, congratulations to two guys who should have gotten in easily, and they did. Ken Griffey Jr., who didn't wait at all. And Mike Piazza, who waited 3 years. So, this weekend, Cowboy, a couple quick fighting notes before we head out. Deontay Wilder, the WBC heavyweight champion, fights this weekend. And it's funny. I watched a montage of his fights on which network does he fight for? I guess he fights for Showtime. He's fighting this kid, you know, Zapilka, and apparently they almost got into a brawl. But it seems like since he won the title, when he beats DeVern, he hasn't really thrown as good punches as he did before winning. He went the distance with Molina. Should he knock this guy out on Saturday?
Yes, and he probably will. I mean, Spilka, as sad as it is a little bit of a step up for him from the other, from Molina and Daufis. Spilka beat his best wins against Tomas Adamek, who went after an old Tomas Adamek. Wilder, by all accounts, should knock him out. Yes, it's. You know, he's fighting another guy who, like, is barely a top 20 heavyweight. Wilder has got the look, but he's legitimately only fought one decent fighter in his whole career. So if he wins this, I mean, it would be a shock if he lost this fight. But when he wins this, he's got a mandatory with Alexander Povetkin, who's a real fighter.
And yeah.
At that point, I mean, it is a better fighter than Stiverne. Povetkin's only, you know, real. You know, he got shellacked by Klitschko a few years ago, but basically everybody did. But he's an Olympic gold medalist, very, very accomplished, good fighter. And we'll see what Wilder has then.
Yeah. Another big fight, the second title fight that not many people are talking about in the undercard. Vyacheslav Glazkov taking on Charles Martin for the vacant IBF heavyweight title. That should be an interesting fight as well. Now the other news, quick news before we head out, in the world of USC involves our man Conor McGregor, who on March 5th at UFC 197 is actually going to go for a second title in another weight class. Did you see that?
Of course. Yes. It shows how much power and how much pull he has and what a draw he is that he's able to do that. Lightweights are, I mean, shark infested waters, very deep division. And it's kind of unprecedented for a guy to, they're letting him keep his 145 pound belt, go up to 155 and challenge for the titles. These super fights very rarely happen in the UFC. And the guy he's fighting, Rafael Dos Anjos, is just a destroyer. Just knocked out Cowboy Cerrone, who's been it was an 8 or 9 fight winning streak in a minute and a half in his last fight. I think McGregor's in big trouble in this fight, even more so than the Aldo fight, because it could. Dos Anjos' style is such that he's a grinder. So I mean, he's good on the feet, but he's a grinder. He can take you down. He can push you up against the cage. Seems like a guy who may be tailor made to knock McGregor off, especially with the size advantage. Dos Anjos won the belt from Anthony Showtime Pettis, who's another kind of like McGregor, just dynamic, lights out striker. And Dos Anjos just beat him up for 5 rounds, just got inside and just pressured him and just beat him up. So great fight. I mean, I give McGregor a lot of credit for doing it, because he doesn't have to. There's still fights for him at 145. And if he loses, he can still go down and fight Frankie Edgar. He can go down and fight the Aldo rematch. But I give him all the credit in the world for I mean, this is by far the toughest test for him that he could take. He's not taking an easy road at all. And by all accounts, he asked for it. He wanted it. They didn't force it on him. So good. Should be a great, great fight. His fights always have an incredible atmosphere. But he's in there with a real bruiser.
Obviously, we had a big card already earlier this year. A couple weeks ago was UFC 195, and Robbie Lawler defeated Carlos Condit. I didn't get a chance to see that. How was that fight?
Sadly enough, I had another engagement. I didn't get a chance to see it either, but I followed it on Twitter. And,
okay.
By all accounts, fight of the year. Great, great, great fight. Lawler won a tight split decision. I love Robbie Lawler. Just a real good story. Blood and guts guy. Was out of the UFC for 8 or 9 years. Came back and has just worked his way up and has a, great champion. And I am going to catch – I will definitely watch the replay of that fight, because Condit is another all-action fighter. I mean, both – that fight had fight of the year written all over it, and by all accounts, it exceeded expectations. Mm.
So, and the next big card, as I'm waiting for the page to load. Let's see, the next big card. Well, 196. Well, the big one, I guess. The big one, 196, is on February 6th, and that's Verdum and Velasquez, the sequel. So that's probably the next big card.
Sunday on Fox. Dominic Cruz and TJ Dillashaw are fighting, and Cruz was a guy who was like a top, maybe the best pound for pound fighter in the world, and he had 2 catastrophic knee injuries. He's only fought once in the last 2.5 years, and it was just a sensational knockout. And Dillashaw beat Renan Barão twice, who was a pound for pound player. And I mean, if Cruz is right, which by all accounts he is, this is a fantastic fight, and it's free. You got to watch it. You absolutely have to watch
it. It's at the Garden. It's at the Hub in Boston.
It's gonna be a war. Great, yep. great fight. 2 great fighters.
Yep. And there's actually a fight night January 30th from the Prudential Center in Newark as well. So, guys, great show as always. Quick turnaround. Listen to this. Hopefully you're listening to this show soon, because we will have a new episode of the Sports Evolution. It'll probably post Monday morning, because we will be recording Sunday night right after the NFL divisional playoff games are complete. We will talk about the games and get you ready for the AFC and NFC championships. Good luck, guys, to your Pats, and maybe they'll be playing next Sunday. We'll see. We'll talk a little more college hoops. Big weekend, a lot of big games. We'll see how the Friars do against the Pirates. And any other sports that pop up? And a little NBA, perhaps? I got a Clippers Heat on right now. Wow, the Heat are up 10. Anything else that strikes our fancy. And we'll see what happened with Deontay Wilder on Saturday night. For the Cowboys, senior and junior, I am Scott. Come with us, because if you don't, Sports Evolution will pass you by. Have a good night. Talk to you Sunday.